We're going to frame this and overnight a copy of it to Grandma in Florida. Melissa eats it up. However, Melissa's 11-year-old brother would be nauseated by that kind of talk. For him, good job, keep up the good work, and a pat on the shoulder might be enough. Your job is to praise the child, not to embarrass him. The long and short of it is, if your child enjoys praise, then by all means provide it, when appropriate. Quick tip. Are we spoiling our kids with superficial, phony praise? Basically, you can give elaborate praise to kids younger than 7. They likely can't tell the difference between fake and genuine praise. Once kids get older than that, it's best to dial back on the praise and make sure that you're only giving them genuine, heartfelt compliments. The tactic of praise sometimes gets criticized for being overused and abused. People say we spoil our children with exaggerated compliments, artificially inflate their self-esteem, and consequently don't prepare them for the big bad world. Is this a real problem? Here's the deal. With kids up to age about 5 or 6, it's not so bad to exaggerate your praise of their effort or their performance. They respond positively to almost any kind of encouragement, and they don't always really know how well or poorly they are doing. But watch out when those kids hit first or second grade. Now they're starting to get an idea of what doing well really means, and they will increasingly be able to tell fake from genuine praise. There are 2 additional devices you can use to make praise a more effective boost to a child's self-esteem. 1. Praise in front of other people. 2. Unexpected praise. While you're talking to your next-door neighbor, for example, your daughter Kelsey shows up. You interrupt your conversation and say, "You should have seen Kelsey out there on the soccer field today. Those other kids never knew what hit them." Kelsey will beam with pride. Unexpected praise can also be quite memorable for a child. Your son is upstairs doing his homework. You call from the bottom of the stairs. "Hey, Jordan." Jordan has no idea what's coming next. You then say, "Did I tell you what a great job you did on the yard?" Jordan will be pleased, and perhaps a little relieved. How do you keep offering praise and encouragement on a regular basis? As mentioned before, this task is surprisingly difficult, since most of us tend not to speak up when we are content. Here are 2 suggestions. First, see if you can make 3 positive comments for every negative one. And by the way, a count is 1 negative comment. These positive remarks don't have to be made at the same time, of course. They can be made later. If the 3-to-1 ratio idea doesn't appeal to you, a second strategy is to have a quota system. Each day you make a deal with yourself that you will make at least 5 positive comments to each child, and consider doing the same with your spouse. Make sure your kids get the home field advantage. 2. Simple requests. The problem with simple requests is that they are not so simple. Parental requests to children can be made more or less effective by the parent's tone of voice, the spontaneity of the request, and the phrasing of the demand. We all have different voices. When she was younger, my daughter had several different variations of the simple expression, "Dad." One "Dad" meant, "I'm excited, and I want to show you something." Another "Dad" meant, "I want assistance because my brother is teasing me." And yet a third "Dad," during her teen years, meant, "Cool it, old timer, you're embarrassing me in public." Parents have different voices, too. The voice we're concerned about here is called chore voice. Chore voice has a quality of, "You're not doing what I expect, and it's really irritating. And what's the matter with you? And when are you going to learn?" And so on. Chore voice has an aggravated, nagging, and anxious tone that most children find annoying. When this parental tone of voice is coupled with a request, it makes cooperation less likely, because you are now asking an angry child to cooperate. A good antidote to chore voice is a business-like, matter-of-fact presentation. John, it is now time to start your homework, or Taylor, bedtime. This tone of voice implies, you may not like this, but it's got to be done now. Testing is much less likely when requests are made in a matter-of-fact way. But believe it or not, the mere tone of voice can also say, if you test or push me, you'll get counted. Quick tip. Try not to spring unpleasant requests on your kids out of the blue. Giving them a little warning will usually help them do what you want, with less whining. The spontaneity of a parental request can also be a cooperation killer. Your son is outside playing baseball with some friends. You go to the front door and ask him if he'd come in and take out the garbage. He blows his stack and you think, what's the big deal? You are correct that your boy overreacted, but the big deal was not the garbage. The big deal to him was the spontaneity. What do you expect the child to say? Thanks for offering me this opportunity to be of service to the family? No one likes spur-of-the-moment interruptions that involve unpleasant tasks. You don't like them either, although you are often stuck with such intrusions. But we're not talking about getting you to cooperate here. We're talking about getting your kids to cooperate. And we're also not saying your children shouldn't have chores to do. They should help out around the house. Structure these tasks into fixed routines so that spontaneous requests are seldom necessary. Finally, the phrasing of a request can make a difference in how kids respond. Phrasing a request as a question and adding the ridiculous "we" to the statement will often ensure noncompliance or testing and manipulation. A super sweet, "Don't we think it's about time to start our homework," for example, is almost guaranteed to elicit a negative response. "I want your schoolwork complete by 5 o'clock," is better. What if, in spite of everything, your simple request still does no good? We'll come back to that question at the end of this chapter, after we've discussed several other start behavior options. 3. Kitchen timers. Kitchen timers are wonderful devices for encouraging good behavior in children. Many kinds are useful, including the 60-minute wind-up variety, as well as computer, small LCD, and even hourglass varieties. The people who manufacture timers think they're for baking cakes. They're not. Timers are for raising kids. Kitchen timers can be a great help for just about any start behavior routine, whether it's picking up, feeding the fish, getting up in the morning, taking out the garbage, or going to bed. Kids, especially the younger ones, have a natural tendency to want to beat a ticking mechanical device. The problem then becomes a case of man against machine, rather than child against parent. These portable motivational gadgets can also be used, if you like, to time the timeouts themselves. Many kids actually prefer doing the timeout with a timer. You can also take timers in the car with you and use them, as we'll learn later, to help control sibling rivalry. Timers can be part of routines for bedtime or bath time or getting up and out in the morning. Timers also can soften the blow of unavoidable spontaneous requests. A friend of yours calls and says she'll be over in 15 minutes. You say to your 5-year-old daughter, "You've got 3 things in the kitchen I would like picked up and put in your room. I'm setting the timer for 10 minutes, and I'll bet you can't beat it." Her response will often be, "Oh yes, I can," as she hurries off to do the job. You could use this same approach to get an 11-year-old to pick up, but you would phrase your request in a more matter-of-fact manner. If the child doesn't respond before the timer dings, you can use the docking system, refer to Strategy 4, or a version of natural consequences, refer to Strategy 5. Kitchen timers are also effective because they are not testable. Machines cannot be emotionally manipulated. Imagine that you had to remind your son to call his grandmother to thank her for the birthday present she mailed. Your son balks, so you set the timer for 10 minutes. The boy's response is, "This is stupid." Testing tactic 2, temper. Your response is silence. The timer's response is tick, tick, tick. 4. The docking system. The principle of docking wages is this. If you don't do the work, you don't get paid. The basic idea of the docking system is similar. If you don't do the work, I'll do it for you, and you'll pay me. The docking system is for children who are kindergarten age or above. This plan, of course, requires that the kids first have a source of funds from an allowance, work around the house, birthday gifts, or some other financial reservoir. You can consider starting an allowance with children who are about 5 years old or more. The payment doesn't have to be anything large, but it's a good idea to have half of it based on completing jobs around the house. For example, cleaning the bedroom, chores, homework. The other half is simply given to the child because he is part of the family, and also so you have some leverage when it comes time to use the docking procedure. Let's imagine you've been having discussions with your 9-year-old son about getting a dog. Your son wants the dog, but you wisely object that you're concerned he won't feed it and take care of it properly. Let's assume you get the dog, partly because you want one too. You then tell the child what the deal will be. He gets an allowance of about $3 per week. You want the dog fed before 6 each night. If he feeds the dog, then fine. If he forgets to feed the dog before 6, you have good news and bad news. The good news is that you will feed the dog for the boy. The bad news is that you charge to feed other people's dogs, and for this mutt, it will be 15 cents per feeding, taken off your son's $3 allowance. The child readily agrees, since he's so happy about getting the dog to begin with. Here's how events might play out. The first night, you're in the kitchen making dinner. It's 6:10. There's no one around, and the dog's hungry. You wait. At 6:15, your son comes running in asking if you fed the dog. You say, no. He says, good, and feeds the dog. You praise the boy. Hey, great job. That dog was sure happy to see you. The second night, you're in the kitchen, and it's 6:20. The dog is looking hungry, but you wait. Now it's 6:30, and the dog is licking your legs. So you finally feed the hungry animal. At 6:40, your boy comes running in. Did you feed the dog? Yes, I did. I charged you 15 cents from your allowance. Well, what did you do that for? Yelling. That's one. This is not a discussion. It was a discussion, but now it's an attack. It's simply one version of testing tactic 2, temper, and it should be counted. You discuss discussions, and you count attacks. In this kind of situation, it's extremely difficult to resist the temptation to get into angry little adult types of comments, such as, do you remember when we bought this stupid animal for you? What did you say? You said, I'll feed the dog every single night. No problem. Right. Well, here we are on only the second night, and I'm already feeding your dog. I'm sick of doing everything around here for all you people. What you're saying may be absolutely correct, but tirades like this will do no good. Parental tantrums and righteous indignation will, in fact, cause harm. Your tirade will do two things. First, the outburst will damage your relationship with your child. Second, your blow-up will ruin the effect of the boy having his allowance docked. So be quiet and let the money do the talking. If money doesn't seem to have much clout with this particular child, take minutes off TV, game, or computer time, or use some other reasonable consequence. The docking system is good for lots of things. How many times have you had the feeling that parenting is unfair? About 9 million times? This unfairness applies especially to the moms, who often feel they get stuck with all the extra chores around the house. Well, think of this. Now, if you are going to have to do all that stuff, you're going to get paid for it. Have you ever said to the kids, for example, I'm happy to do your laundry on Saturday. All you have to do is get your clothes down to the washer by 9. But I'll be darned if I'm going to go up to your room every weekend to get your dirty underwear out from underneath your bed. Now, let's imagine you're going to use the docking system for laundry. You say this, I'm happy to do your laundry on Saturday mornings. All you have to do is get your clothes down to the washer by 9. If you don't get your clothes down by then, I will go up to your room to get your dirty things. But I charge for that service. And for a pile the size of the one you usually have, it will probably cost you 75 cents to a dollar. Quick tip. With the docking system, you tell the kids, I have good news and bad news. The good news is that if you forget a chore, I'll do it for you. The bad news is that you're going to pay me for helping you out. Then tell them the exact amount they will have to pay you. 5. Natural consequences. With natural consequences, you let the big bad world teach the child what works and what doesn't. There are times when staying out of the problem is the best approach. Suppose you have a fourth grader who is taking piano lessons for the first time. She is not practicing as she should and can't sleep at night because she's worrying that her piano teacher will be mad. What should you do? Nothing right away. See if the natural consequence of not practicing, teacher's displeasure, will alter your daughter's behavior. Some piano teachers are very good at getting uncooperative kids to tickle the ivories on a regular basis between lessons. If after a few weeks the teacher's efforts don't work, you may want to try other start behavior tactics, such as using the timer or charting. Or suppose you have a boy in the sixth grade. Because you're in a hurry every morning, part of his before-school routine is making his own lunch, with goods that you buy, and then brown bagging it to school. It seems like every other day he is telling you how hungry he was at lunch, because he forgot to pack his food. What should you do? Relax, don't lecture, and leave the responsibility squarely on his shoulders. Let the natural consequence, his empty stomach, talk to him, instead of his mother talking to him. Give him some encouragement by saying something like this, I'm sure you'll do better tomorrow. Another example of a good time to use natural consequences? The wintertime dress of preteens and adolescents. All parents know that middle school and high school students think there are federal laws against zipping or buttoning up their coats in the winter. These kids do not want to look like their mothers dressed them in the morning. The solution? Let the cold talk to the kids if they're not dressed properly, and avoid starting the day with the obvious aggravating comment, you're not going out like that again, are you? Here's one final real-life example of natural consequences. A mother I used to see years ago had a 4-year-old boy who was driving her nuts in the morning. The boy was in preschool, but he wouldn't get dressed on time for his carpool ride. Every morning when the horn honked in the driveway, this little guy was sitting in his pajamas watching cartoons on TV. The poor mom was tearing her hair out. One morning she decided she'd had enough. The boy was in his pajamas watching cartoons when the car in the drive honked. Mom then calmly sent her son off to school in his pajamas. The child spent 3 hours with his peers while wearing little flowered booties and with butterflies all over his chest. At our next session, a relieved mom reported to me that, since that day, she never again had a problem with her son being ready for his ride. Caution. Natural reinforcers, such as praise, sometimes aren't enough to motivate children to complete a task, especially if the kids hate the job. In these cases, artificial rewards can be used. Try to borrow some motivation from somewhere else. It works. 6. Charting. Charting is a very friendly motivational technique. With charting, you use something like a calendar to keep track of how well the child is doing with different start behavior routines. You can put the chart on the refrigerator door, if public acclaim is desired, or on the back of the child's bedroom door, if privacy is desired. The days of the week usually go across the top of the chart, and down the left side is a list of the tasks the child is working on, such as picking up after herself, getting to bed, and clearing the table after supper. If the child completes the task to your satisfaction, you indicate this on the chart with stickers for the little kids approximate ages 4 to 9, and grades or points, A through F, 5 through 1, for the older children. A typical chart, for example, might have 3 to 5 items on it. Nothing too complicated, but satisfying to complete. With charting, positive reinforcement comes, we hope, from three things. The chart itself, parental praise, and the inherent satisfaction of doing a good job. We call these three things natural reinforcers. When my daughter was 9, she decided she wanted to take piano lessons. Although this was her choice, she didn't practice regularly and, like the fourth grader we mentioned earlier, she worried a lot that night before her lesson that her teacher was going to be upset with her when she couldn't perform well. We first tried natural consequences, suggesting to our little girl that she work out the problem with her teacher. This tactic failed, so we next tried charting with only natural reinforcers. Our agreement was this. Each day after practicing, our daughter was to find her mother or father and tell that parent exactly how many minutes she had practiced. One of us would then write that number for that day on the chart and praise our budding concert pianist for her work. That was it. The plan worked like a charm. Unfortunately for parents, natural reinforcers are frequently insufficient to motivate a child to complete a particular task. Your son, for example, may simply be a natural slob. A clean room means nothing to him. Or your little girl may have ADHD and be learning disabled. So homework provides no satisfaction, but much frustration for her. In these cases, you must use what we call artificial reinforcers. These are things that the child will earn for successful completion of a task. The reinforcers may have nothing directly to do with the given task. But since the activity doesn't offer any incentive to the child, and in fact may provide a negative incentive, we are going to try to borrow motivation from somewhere else. The little girl who hates homework, for example, might earn part of her allowance, a special meal, or a special time with you. For smaller children, the best ideas are often relatively small things that can be dished out frequently in little pieces. With older kids, larger rewards that take longer to earn become more feasible. Let yourself be creative in coming up with reinforcers. Rewards certainly do not always have to be material. Some kids, for example, will work hard to earn minutes to stay up later at night, or to be able to do a special activity with one of their parents. My daughter used what she called a sticker book with her 3- and 5-year-olds. She folded 3 sheets of colored construction paper together and put 2 staples in the crease. The child's name that went on the cover along with some decorations. Then she went sticker shopping with the kids and got stickers each of them liked. Whenever the child then completed a start behavior, he or she got to choose a sticker and put it in the book. The kids were proud of their books. Possible artificial reinforcers. A trip for ice cream. Brightly colored tokens. A small toy. Renting a special game. Outing with a parent. Shopping trip. Sleepover. Playing a game with a parent. A no-chore voucher. Camping out in the backyard. Card for a collection. Tech time. Breakfast in bed. Cash. Staying up past bedtime. Renting a special movie. A grab bag surprise. Comic book or magazine. Friend over for supper. Choice of 3 reinforcers. Reading a story with parents. Sleeping with the dog or cat. Special phone call. Other items for collections. Helping make and eat cookies. Using a power tool with supervision. Keep charts simple. 3 or 4 things to work on at one time are enough. More than that, get too confusing. I saw a family once who created a chart for their son on which they were attempting to rate 33 different behaviors every day. I had to give them an A for effort, but also a high rating for confusion. Keep in mind that you probably will not want to do charting for long periods of time. Charting can become a semi-obnoxious behavioral accounting task, and the positive effects can fade when mom and dad become tired of filling out the chart every day. So build in discontinuation criteria Rules for determining when the chart is no longer necessary. You might say, for example, that if the child gets good scores, define this precisely, for 2 weeks running on a particular behavior, that item will be taken off the chart. When the child has earned his way off the chart entirely, it's time to go out for pizza and a movie to celebrate. If after a while the child doesn't keep up with the desired behavior, you can reinstate the chart. 7. Counting variation, brief start behavior. As mentioned earlier, one of the most frequent mistakes parents make with the 1-2-3 program is attempting to use counting to get a child to do start behavior, like homework, chores, or getting up and out in the morning. Recall that these tasks can take 20 minutes or more, while counting itself only produces several seconds worth of motivation. What if the start behavior itself only required a few seconds worth of cooperation? You want your daughter to hang up her coat, feed the cat, or come into the room. Counting, which is so useful for stop behavior, can also be used for some start behavior, but only on one condition. What you want the child to do cannot take more than about 2 minutes. For example, your child throws her coat on the floor after school, and you ask her to pick it up. She doesn't, and you say, "That's one." If she still refuses to comply and gets timed out, she goes and serves the time. When she comes out, you say, "Would you please hang up your coat?" If there is still no cooperation, another timeout would follow. What if this girl, for some unknown reason, is in a totally ornery mood today and never seems to get the idea? With start behavior tactics, you have more flexibility. Switch from counting to the docking system and the kitchen timer. Set the timer for 5 minutes and tell your daughter she has that time to hang up the coat. If she does pick it up, fine. You promise you'll not say another word. If she doesn't hang the thing up, however, you have good news and bad news. You'll hang up the coat for her, but you will charge for your services. The charge will be 25 cents for the coat and 25 cents for all the aggravation involved in getting her to hang it up. Keep the talking to a minimum and count whining, arguing, yelling, and other forms of testing. What can you use this version of the 1-2-3 for? Items like brushing teeth, picking up something, or just, "Would you please come here for a second?" You are in the kitchen, and you need some help for a minute. You can see your 10-year-old son in the other room lying on the couch, eyes wide open. You say, "Would you please come here?" His response is, "I can't. I'm busy." This kid's about as busy as a rock, so let's redo this one. "Would you please come here?" "I can't. I'm busy." That's one. "Oh, all right." And the reluctant servant enters the room to carry out your bidding. Simple requests revisited. Now, let's return to our question about simple requests. What if, in spite of the fact that your voice quality was matter of fact, your request was not spur of the moment, and your phrasing was not wishy-washy, your child still does not comply with what you ask him to do? After listening to this chapter, you should now see that you have several options. For example, after your son returned home from school, you told him, "Be sure you change your clothes before you go outside to play." He's having a snack and playing an electronic game, still in his school clothes, when one of his friends calls him from the back door. Your son calls back that he'll be right out. It doesn't sound as though a different wardrobe is on his mind at all. Here are some choices you have at this point. 1. Set the timer for 10 minutes and tell your son, "I want your clothes changed before the timer goes off." Avoid what we call shouldy thinking, the kind of parental thinking that expects kids to act like adults. If you were into shouldy thinking, you might have said, "I want your clothes changed before the timer goes off. I already told you that. What does it take to get you to listen to me for once? I'm the one who has to do the laundry, you know, and buy you all sorts of new things to wear." You could also add a reward or a consequence to the act of changing clothes before the timer goes off. You would not do this every time, but sometimes a strategy like this can jumpstart the kids into remembering a new behavior. If you change before the timer goes off, You can stay up 10 minutes later tonight. If you don't beat the timer, bedtime is 10 minutes earlier. Simple, calm, straightforward. 2. Can you use the docking system here? No, because you can't dress him and charge him for the service. You could, of course, use the docking system if what you had asked your son to do was take out the garbage. After his first refusal of the refuse, you might simply say, "Do you want to take out the trash, or do you want to pay me to do it?" Good maneuver. 3. How about natural consequences for our reluctant clothes changer? This tactic is a possibility. The boy who plays outside in his school clothes might be required to wash his outfit as soon as he comes in. 4. Finally, you could consider using counting. Can your son change clothes in 2 minutes? Maybe. So as the boy is walking out the door, school outfit still on, you simply say, "That's one." He probably won't know right away what you're talking about, so he'll respond with, "What?" His comment may even be a little ornery. That's good. Make him think a little. You pause, then say, "School clothes." If your son then goes off to his room in a huff to change, fine. You probably don't have to count the huff. If, however, he yells at you, "Why do I always have to change my idiot school clothes? Are they made out of gold threads?" Pop quiz. What should you do now? You got it. You say, "That's two," for testing tactic 2, temper. Getting started. Rehearsing your routines. These are some of the tactics you can use to help set up your routines with the kids. The better a routine, the less aggravation and the less motivation is required when the kids have to produce the required behavior. The sign of a good routine is that your prompting and nagging are minimal, and your comments mostly involve positive reinforcement. It's a good idea to practice the routines once you've defined them. Simply defining a routine and then expecting the kids to comply without any rehearsals is the little adult assumption at work in your brain again. Kids need to see, feel, and remember how the particular routine works. So make time for some leisurely dress rehearsals of your start behavior routines before the procedure actually needs to be used. With the little ones, under 5 years old, you can use a model and pretend method for practicing. You say something like this, "Let's practice getting ready for bed. Isn't that silly? The sun is still shining. What do we have to do to get ready?" Then reinforce the kids' positive answers. Next, you describe the process as you model a procedure for them. "First, I'm going to wash up, just like you said. Then I'm going to put my jammies on. Put something over your clothes. Next, we sit on the bed for a story." After you've modeled the routine, have the child do it and praise her as she goes along. That's it. You remembered what was next. Good work. Remember, some kids like business and some syrup. With older kids, 5 and up, you can skip the modeling and just ask them to go through the motions. Praise the kids and suggest modifications in what they are doing as necessary. Once you have rehearsed your routines and started using them, try to keep pretty much to the same time, same place, same way. But what if the kids get sloppy with their homework or bedtime routine? Remember start behavior tactic 5, natural consequences? A natural consequence of getting sloppy with a routine is needing to rehearse and practice the routine again. No righteous indignation, nagging, or arguing from you is necessary. Be nice and praise cooperation. You'll find that things will fall back into place. That's our list of start behavior strategies. You'll probably be able to come up with several of your own after a while. Next, we'll take a look at how to apply these tactics to some of the most common start behavior problems. You're going to be an expert motivator in no time. Chapter Summary. Your 7 Start Behavior Tactics. 1. Positive reinforcement. 2. Simple requests. 3. Kitchen timers. 4. The docking system. 5. Natural consequences. 6. Charting. 7. Counting Variation. Keep your thinking cap on, and good luck. 13. Getting up and out in the morning. Building the routines that start your day. If ever a routine was sorely needed, it's for getting the kids up and out of the house in the morning. This is a problem for grammar school kids, but it can also be an issue for preschoolers, high school students, and even spouses. Morning often brings out the worst in everybody. Many people, both parents and kids, are naturally crappy at this point, and there is the additional strain of having to get someplace on time. The pressure, nervousness, and emotional thunderstorms that can result have ruined many a parent's day. For the kids, the morning routine involves a whole sequence of start behaviors. 1. Getting out of bed. 2. Bathroom, washing up, and brushing teeth. 3. Getting dressed. 4. Eating breakfast. And 5. Leaving the house on time with the right equipment. What is required may vary some from family to family, like switching 3 and 4, but it's basically the same job. Believe it or not, these stressful morning situations can often be shaped up rather quickly using some of the START behavior principles we just outlined. Remember, on school day mornings, counting will not be your primary tactic, and the no talking and no emotion rules still apply, even if you haven't had your first cup of coffee. Before you design your morning routine, a few pieces of advice may help. First, do as much preparation as you can the night before, packing book bags, selecting clothes, planning breakfast. Second, try to get up 15 minutes before the kids. Older children may give you more snooze time. And third, keep breakfast simple, quick, and healthy. Getting up and out for the little kids. Small children in the 2 to 5-year-old range are going to need a lot of help and supervision in the morning. These children are not capable of sustaining a positive activity for more than a few minutes, and most of them will not even think of what needs to be done to get out of the house. You're going to have to help 2 and 3-year-olds get dressed and wash up. Try to do things in the same order every day. You'll also be responsible for remembering anything the children have to take with them. And while you're doing all this, you'll want to praise whatever positive efforts they make. 4 and 5-year-olds will often respond to the use of very primitive basic charts. The chart may have only 2 or 3 items on it. These charts can be combined with kitchen timers to produce an effective motivational system. Set the timer for 15 minutes and give the child a cue that it's time to get started. Many of the little ones are already out of bed, so that item on the chart has been successfully completed. Whichever other tasks the child finishes before the timer goes off are recognized with special stickers. With kids in the primary grades, the chart may have all the morning routine items on it, and the timer may or may not be necessary. For each task, the child earns her favorite sticker for a super job and her next favorite sticker for a good job. No sticker at all means, you blew it today, better luck tomorrow. The application of the stickers, of course, should be accompanied by a lot of praise. Good job, or wow, you did it in only 12 minutes. In some families, breakfast and TV must wait until the child is totally ready to leave the house, washed, dressed, and packed. The breakfast, entertainment, and praise serve as reinforcers for the child's successful start behavior. What about fighting, teasing, whining, or other stop behavior in the morning? Stop behavior should be counted as usual. If there is time for a timeout, don't hesitate to use one. If there is not enough time, consider using a timeout alternative. Guys, that's 3. Bedtime is 15 minutes earlier for both of you tonight. Okay, let's get in the car. Responsibility training for older kids. For children 9 years old and up, including high school age, you can still use the methods just described. But if you have the guts, and if you'd like to get out of an unwanted supervisory role faster, here's a version of natural consequences for you. This up-and-out program involves some drastic alterations in the morning routine, and these changes will often shock the kids into being much more responsible for themselves. But be forewarned, extreme self-restraint on the part of moms and dads is required. Before explaining this new regime, we remind parents that, believe it or not, most kids want to go to school and would be embarrassed if they were late or didn't show up at all. Parents don't appreciate that their kids feel this way, because the kids goof off in the morning instead of getting ready. But the kids dilly-dally precisely because their parents have habitually taken all the responsibility for them getting to school on time. Now that way of thinking is going to change, in both children and parents. Here's how the new procedure works. You explain to the kids that from now on, it will be their responsibility, not yours, to get up and out in the morning. You will neither supervise them nor nag them. If you have been waking them up, you will wake them up only once from now on. A better system is to get an alarm clock or cell phone with an alarm function and show the child how to use it. Explain to the kids that if they go back to sleep after your one wake-up call or after the alarm goes off, you will not wake them again, and they will definitely have a problem. You make it clear to the kids that getting up, getting dressed, washing up, eating breakfast, and leaving on time will be their job, totally. If you wish, you can chart the kids on how well they do getting up and out, but other than casual conversation, you will not say anything to them. Your children will not believe that you are serious, because they will find it completely incomprehensible that you would ever allow them to go to school late. You may have trouble with that concept, too. So guess what? You're going to have to make believers out of them. This new system relies on natural consequences. If the kids dilly-dally in the morning, they're going to run into trouble somewhere. The trouble may be with the other kids in the carpool, who are now afraid that they are going to be late because of your son or daughter. Can you stand that? Or the trouble may come from the child having to explain to a principal or teacher why he was late, and has no parental note excusing him. Most kids don't want these kinds of problems, so we use the threat of these natural consequences to help shape them up. Quick tip. Tell your older kids that from now on, getting up and out in the morning is going to be their responsibility totally. You will neither supervise nor nag them. At first, your children will not believe you are serious, but they will believe you are serious after you've let them get burned a few times. What's your chief job in all this? It's keeping quiet. Some parents can't stand this routine. It drives some grown-ups crazy to watch their kids fooling around when the bus or carpool ride is coming in 5 minutes. These are the moments when extreme parental self-restraint is called for. You will want to talk, nag, argue, or scream. I've had to ask many parents to take their coffee, retire to the bedroom, and not watch the impending disaster. One mother told me, if I'm going to have to keep quiet and not watch, I want a martini, not a cup of coffee. Breakfast is optional for these older children. You can put some food out if that was your usual routine before, but you can't remind the kids to eat it. It's better if the kids just get what they want for themselves. Children won't die from missing breakfast. When they leave, you say nothing about coats, hats, or gloves, unless there is danger of frostbite. What you are doing with this new up-and-out arrangement is teaching the kids responsibility and invoking a sacred rule of psychology. Sometimes the hard way is the best way to learn. The lessons sink in more when kids get burned a few times than when they simply hear a lecture. So you have to be willing to let the kids get burned. Don't even start this procedure unless you are convinced you are ready for the strain and, more important, that you can keep quiet. It usually takes no more than 5 days for the child to shape up and successfully get up and out on his own. During that 5-day period, your child will probably be late to school a few times and will feel embarrassed. He will have had the experience of suddenly realizing at 7:50 that he's not dressed and that mom didn't remind him that his ride was coming at 8. He may have gotten to school and realized he forgot his math book because he was late leaving. He may also have blown up at his mother a few times and been counted because she didn't provide any reminders or excuse notes. Kids have four ways of getting to school: carpool, bus, walking, or riding bikes. When they can walk or bike to school, of course, this up-and-out program is the easiest. With carpools or bus, you can drive the kids if they don't make their connection. Don't rush, however. Let them get to school late. Most kids will not get dependent on your driving, especially if they're tardy anyway. If you do have to drive the kids, don't lecture on the way. These negative experiences have quite an impact on most kids. If the parents are consistent, don't talk, and let the kids get burned, the children will shape up in a few days. No "I told you so" comments are allowed. Then things will be much more peaceful at home in the morning, and the kids will be much more responsible. Some parents have used charting along with our Natural Consequences program. If you decide to do this, make sure you praise good performances. It's so much easier with you getting yourself up in the morning. And review the chart at least once a week. You can discuss the issue, listen, give brief suggestions, or make modifications at times other than when the kids are getting ready in the morning. Facing morning routine challenges. Before they've used this gutsy procedure, many parents think their kids will be indifferent. Moms and dads think their children really won't care whether or not they get to school on time. Part of the reason the grown-ups believe this is because the children have said so. Never believe a child who says, "I don't care." He usually means the opposite. If you are skeptical about this up-and-out procedure, consider trying this arrangement and see what happens. Most kids, not all, but most, will shape up. The kids will get up and out on their own. The most important rules are to keep quiet and be willing to let the children suffer the consequences, more than once, if necessary. You may want to let the school know what you're doing. Most teachers and principals will cooperate with you, especially if you explain your purpose and label the procedure independence training. What if you just don't think you can stand it? Remember that you have other START behavior tools for establishing routines. Consider charting, perhaps with artificial reinforcers, and the use of a kitchen timer. Since these kids are older, you might also discuss your morning routines at a family meeting. Refer to Chapter 22. One way or another, though, it is absolutely critical for everyone to start the day on a positive note. Adults take bad memories from unsuccessful mornings to work with them, and kids can take those same lousy memories to school. If you are successful using Natural Consequences, relax and enjoy your kids, another cup of coffee, and the peace and quiet. Good luck. Chapter Summary. Morning Routine. 1. Out of bed. 2. Bathroom. Wash up. Brush teeth. 3. Get dressed. 4. Breakfast. 5. Leave on time with the right equipment. 14. Cleaning up and chores. Tips for getting your kids to clean up after themselves. While our research over the years has indicated that whining is the most aggravating stop behavior problem for parents of young children, kids not cleaning up after themselves has consistently won out as the most irritating start behavior problem. Some kids leave their stuff strewn all over the house, but amazingly, they also have enough left to mess up their entire bedroom. And other undone chores compete with messy houses and messy rooms in the battle to drive parents crazy. Unfortunately for us, most kids are not naturally neat. Perhaps the picking up and chore genes are missing from their chromosomal makeup. Conclusion: children need to be trained to pick up, clean their rooms, and do chores. How can you do that? By this time, you shouldn't have to be reminded that you won't get the kids to complete these unpleasant tasks by nagging or delivering the lecture. The 7 reasons why it's easier on me for you to have a clean room. Counting isn't so helpful either here, because it doesn't provide the long-term motivation needed to complete chores. Instead, you have several options for your kids who are 4, 5, and older. Here are some good ones. Strategies for dealing with messy bedrooms. Your stomach churns with disgust when you view the destruction and chaos that is your daughter's bedroom. Things are thrown all over. You've forgotten what color the carpet was. The cat was last seen in there 3 weeks ago. Here are a couple of simple routines. Close the door and don't look. Having a clean room is not a life-or-death matter. We know of no research indicating that kids who didn't keep their rooms neat grow up to be violent or more likely to divorce. Besides, whose room is it? You don't have to live in it, so why not just ask the child to keep the door closed so you don't have to deal with the aggravation? Most parents don't like this idea, but before you dismiss the close-the-door-and-don't-look method, ask yourself one question. Do you have a child with behavioral or emotional problems such as ADHD, learning disability, anxiety, or depression? If you have a handicapped child, or one who's very difficult to begin with, why add another set of difficulties to your problems? Imagine that your daughter hates school, hates homework, has no friends, feels lousy most of the time, and fights with her brother constantly. Should you also get after her about the stuff lying around on her bedroom floor? You need to straighten out your priorities, because you have bigger fish to fry. Option one sure beats yelling and nagging. Option one is quite legitimate for some families. But there are two problems with this procedure. One, most parents find the notion unacceptable. And two, dirty dishes and dirty laundry can't be ignored. If you don't want to use option one, more suggestions will follow in the next sections of this chapter. As for dirty dishes and dirty clothes, you can try almost any other start behavior tactic. A timer, charting, or the 1-2-3 method, if the dishes or clothes can be picked up in less than 2 minutes, can be helpful. Remember to praise compliance from time to time with older kids, and frequently with younger children. Some parents whose kids are older simply tell them that any clothes that don't make it to the laundry or hamper don't get washed. Then the child has to wash them herself. Those are examples of natural consequences. The docking system can also be considered. You go and get the dirty clothes or dishes from the room, but you charge for your labor. You'll feel better about having to do the job. Make sure you keep your mouth shut about the whole operation and keep the fees reasonable. The weekly cleanup routine. Don't like option one? Option two is a favorite with many moms and dads. With the weekly cleanup routine, the kids have to clean their rooms only once a week, but according to your specifications. You might explain that the following chores have to be done. Pick up toys. Put clothes in hamper. Make bed. Maybe vacuum. A specific day and time, such as Saturday morning, is chosen. And the child is not allowed to go outside, play, or do anything else until his room is done and you've approved it. Cleaning the room is a start behavior, and you'll be rewarding the child immediately after the room cleaning with both freedom and praise. If artificial reinforcers are necessary, these rewards will be tallied or recorded at checkout time, potentially with a chart. Many parents have tried something like the weekly cleanup routine, but the grown-ups often ruin the whole procedure by getting into an argument with the child at checkout. Never argue about what needs to be done. Make the specifications clear in the first place. For example, I'm done with my room. Can I go out now? Your bed's not finished. What do you mean? That's good enough. Dad turns to walk away. What's the matter with it? That's one. Oh, for Pete's sake. Goes to finish bed. This dad had already explained that the bed had to be neatly made, so there was no need for further talk. His son starts testing, using the badgering tactic, and after ignoring the badgering once, Dad uses the 1-2-3 strategy. If the child winds up back in his room with a 3-count and a timeout, that's perfect. He'll have a few minutes to make his bed properly. Tactics for picking up around the house. Let me make one thing perfectly clear. The close the door and don't look method applies only to the kids' rooms. The scheme does not apply to the rest of your house. You shouldn't allow the children to leave your kitchen, family room, dining room, bathrooms, and hallways cluttered with their things. As all parents know, kitchen counters and tables are such convenient dumping grounds. You certainly can't close a door and not look when the entire house is involved. Here are some useful routines for common areas of the house. Kitchen timer and docking system. These two start behavior tactics can be very handy in getting the house picked up, especially when you can't avoid having to straighten up on the spur of the moment. When the job has to be done right away, the timer is helpful for picking up public areas such as family rooms and kitchens. If a surprise guest is coming over, you may not have much time to play around. Hey kids, Mr. and Mrs. Johnson are coming over in 45 minutes. I'll need all your stuff out of the kitchen by then. I'm setting the timer. When using the timer like this, it's perfectly okay and fun to add an artificial reward if the room is done within a certain time, or even an artificial punishment if it's not. They don't do it, they pay you. Just be sure not to use artificial rewards for everything you ask the kids to do. Your praise should be enough reward most of the time. And don't forget that part of a child's satisfaction when you praise him is knowing that he did something that made you happy. The garbage bag method. This procedure has been a favorite of parents for many years. The deal is this. You first encourage the children as much as possible not to leave their stuff lying around the house. You're not going to expect perfection. Stuff includes clothes, DVDs, books, papers, toys, Barbies, shoes, pens, comics, electronic games, videos, fossils, and so on. Next, you tell the kids that at a certain time every day, their things have to be removed from the public areas of the house and returned to their bedrooms. Maybe you pick 8 p.m. as the cutoff time. You will pick up anything left out after 8 and put it in a big garbage bag or some other container. The child will lose the right to use those items until 6 p.m. the following day. You can set the times however you want. Some parents threaten to actually throw away the things they find that are not put away. There are two problems with this notion. First, if you do throw away some of your children's possessions, that's pretty harsh. But parents have done it. After all, they're just kids and don't have an inherent desire to pick up after themselves. Second, it's likely you won't really throw the stuff away. You'll just go blustering around about that possibility and how unfair your life is. In this case, you are simply making a useless, empty threat, and the kids will catch on to you right away. Quick tip. Your kids do not have a right to mess up your entire house. Tell the children that by a certain time every day, anything of theirs that you find lying around will be confiscated and unavailable to them until a certain time the following day. Pick up the kids' things without grumbling or lecturing. You'll soon find that before the magic hour comes each day, they will be scurrying around to salvage their possessions. So imagine you're using the garbage bag routine and have picked 8 p.m. as the cutoff time. At 7:50 p.m., you remind 7-year-old Caitlin that her things need to be picked up. She doesn't respond because she doesn't really think you'll do anything about it. At 8:05 p.m., however, when you quietly begin walking around with a large plastic bag and have already claimed 5 of her prized possessions, Caitlin becomes a believer. She runs around frantically grabbing whatever of hers she can find before you get to it and yelling, "This is stupid. This isn't fair." You consider counting her screaming, but you don't. You put the bag away in your bedroom closet. The following night at 7:50, when you say clean-up time, Caitlin scurries around retrieving her things and then takes them to her bedroom. You say, "Good job, Caitlin. It looks real nice in here." You are a model of restraint and a motivational wizard. The 55-gallon drum. I cannot take credit for this next plan. A lady described it when I spoke with her on the phone many years ago. She told me that picking up around her house had never been a problem. This resourceful mother kept a 55-gallon metal drum in the garage, which was right next to her kitchen. Whenever she found anything of her children's that was out of place, she would simply put the items in the metal drum. This procedure had become so routine with her four boys that whenever one of the kids couldn't find something of his, he would simply look in the drum. One day, for example, her second oldest